These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, at 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio on 720 WGN. Welcome to Tuesday afternoon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're going to go to actually London a little bit later today, talk to Steve Brine, a member of Parliament, a conservative, one of my favorite Tories, and we'll check in with the president's visit there, which is big, but Theresa May's resignation, which is bigger, and that comes Friday. The president handing out some praise today, not just for May, but for a few of the people that he wants or who would like to replace Theresa May. Nigel Farage also meeting with the president, perhaps right about now. So that's coming up a little bit later in the program. We're going to start by saying hello to John Najarian, who's watching not 10 Downing Street, but I guess Wall Street this afternoon. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Well, certainly a better day to be talking to you than many of the recent past days.
Just about all of them. Yeah, this is the best day on Wall Street, I think, since mid-February.
Yeah. To see a 500-point rally like that, that's impressive, especially given the sentiment that was surrounding the market just over the past couple days.
Yeah, it's been a was it the Dow that lost 5% in May? Is 5% the right number?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yep, and it did, and it was worse for the NASDAQ, of course, which just was clocked. Yesterday was probably one of the worst days that the NASDAQ has had in forever, but at least that wasn't May, that was June.
Yeah, the NASDAQ up 2% today, and yesterday there were concerns about investigations, right, from the government, and did those just go away today, or why is it that the NASDAQ is back?
I think they thought it was just overdone. We always have reaction to news, and in some cases it's an overreaction, and if it's an overreaction and there are no buyers for whatever reason, or at least a buyers at much lower prices. That's what we had yesterday. They didn't like the news about the Justice Department going after many of these tech giants, and they certainly were surprised, I think, that stocks like Facebook were down as much as $14 and $15 on the lows of the day yesterday.
I want to talk trade in just a couple of minutes, but I start with Jerome Powell, who gave a speech today. I think John, within a stone's throw of here. I think he's in Chicago today.
And he is.
Seemed more open, I guess, than in the past to are being willing to cut interest rates to fuel the economy if trade gets us in trouble. Is that the big fuel for the market today?
It's certainly one of the big ones. We also had some positive readings out of China as far as what they would be willing to do against the United States and or with the United States. Some chatter out of Mexico basically saying they really would prefer to negotiate rather than to have to experience these tariffs,
right,
which would be terrible, of course. Those tariffs would really carve up Mexico, given that so many of the manufacturing goes back and forth across that border. It's not just a one-time crossing.
Well, then the easing with Mexican fears has helped the automotive stocks today, correct?
Yes, very much so. I mean, literally Ford and GM were down 5% almost immediately on news of what the president intends to do next Monday. If his, at least that was his initial salvo, was he was going to throw 5% tariffs that would escalate to a maximum of 25% if Mexico didn't do something to curb the illegal immigration.
Okay.
And we'll have to see whether or not that negotiation works with Mexico.
Well, here's my question, and you tell me, I guess. But so we're feeling better about Mexico because the Mexican, I think it was the foreign minister, said he's confident that they can negotiate something. Okay, that's on the positive side if we believe the Mexican foreign minister. But at the same time, I was watching the president live in London today say, no, I expect to implement tariffs next week, and I expect them to go to 10%, then 15%, then 20%. Is the market just more likely to believe the Mexican foreign minister than the president?
Well, we'll see exactly what kind of deal the Mexican foreign official can offer the president of our country, because He's very frustrated by, you know, the videos that are showing as many as 1,000 folks coming across the border on a single evening in El Paso last week. And obviously, Mr. Miller has the president's ear on this, apparently. And whenever the president hears or sees anything about that, he wants to hit and hit hard. And that's why he's gone to these tariffs, even though, of course, this is not a tariff like the kind that we're doing against China right now.
Right.
This is one to moderate a different type of behavior.
I was listening to a former Obama administration official, and they said that they did get Mexico to step up patrols on Mexico's southern border. I think it's about a 200-mile border where, you know, it's easier to stop these Central Americans from coming in. But they were able to do it with the carrot, not the stick so much. So I don't know if this is going to work. We'll see. But in the past, Mexico has stepped up and cracked down. So that's at least good to see on that front. Okay, so Uber today, the quiet period ended, so Uber's active?
Yeah, virtually every brokerage on the street started talking about them. And I think it also didn't hurt that after that just horrible start for Lyft, where it traded into the 40s very quickly after its IPO, it has been recovering since. So virtually every analyst on the street was writing positive comments about Uber and the potential for growth. Targets as high as $90 were set by some analysts, but most of them were probably right around 60 for a stock that right now is trading just under its IPO price, just under that $42
level. Microphone.
We're going to talk about the market for high-end watches a little bit later in the program. Are you a big watch guy?
I am indeed, especially big watches.
and so I'm reading that some of the I guess used watches, vintage watches, are drawing more money even than the new ones. I don't know. Have you looked at the market like that at all?
I have. And, you know, it's like you and I always say, the asset gathers its value by its scarcity. So certainly there's an appreciation for the design and or the artisan that crafted that watch, because the ones you and I are talking about are virtually all handmade. But to have something where you've got a production of 100,000 and something where you've got only a known universe of 4,000, you can figure which one of those might be worth more based on that theory.
Let's make this clear. Those are the watches you're talking about. The watches I'm talking about cost $19.
Okay.
People tune in to get a tip from you. What are you watching today?
Today we were watching a biotech stock called Amicus Therapeutics, FOLD. They just priced about $150 million worth of stock. They did it at a better price than people expected, and the stock immediately rallied. So that's a great thing for the company. It gives them more money to be able to fund the build-out of these gene therapies that they do. So we were buying FOLD, Fold, today.
John Najarian, great to talk to you. Follow John at John Najarian and the Najarian Family Offices as well. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Stephen.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, I have friends who are real watch guys. They're not watch guys like the watch guys we're about to talk about, but it's not anything that's ever registered with me. For me, a watch, well, I wear a Fitbit now, so I guess that's how I tell time, but more often than not, I look at my phone. I've never had an expensive watch, but the really expensive watches are taking off, and it's even having an impact on Wall Street. On the phone line now is Dion Raboan, who is a markets editor at Axios, one of my favorite sites. Dion, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, what's this all about, man? So Apollo Global Management, right, took the watch companies they own public, and things are taking off?
Yeah, well, that's just kind of the latest big blow or the latest big melt up in this market. The watch market is actually, the luxury watch market has been on fire for the past 2 years, maybe going back even 3 years. But it's been steadily bubbling up here in the U.S., and particularly the used watch market. You look back 10, 20 years ago, there wasn't really a market for used luxury watches. And now you're starting to see, you know, when you go online, some of those used watches are actually selling for more than the new watches.
Okay, but
so what would be...
before we get too far here, when you say luxury watches, what are you talking about? How much does a luxury watch cost?
There we're talking Rolex, we're talking Patek Philippe, Cartier, some of these big name brands, and you're running anywhere from usually about $5,000 up to $100,000 up to literally, you know, the Paul Newman's watch sold for, I think it was $10 million a few years back. So
really?
you're talking a lot of money for some of these watches.
And who's buying these watches?
Well, that's the thing. It's a pretty diversified base. Obviously, if you're betting on Paul Newman's signature, one, you know, worn watch for millions of dollars, you're a particular kind of person. But some of these watches, the $5,000, $10,000 watches, are being worn by, you know, guys who, I don't know if we call them average, but, you know, they're not millionaires, billionaires. These are guys who are kind of saving their pennies, putting away, you know, they're maybe making $70,000 to $80,000, $100,000 a year, but they're not super wealthy
right. People.
It's just kind of a new thing that's really developed, and that's a way to distinguish yourself from the crowd.
Is it their diamond earrings or their Ferrari, or what is it exactly that it says for them?
I think it's just really, like I said, it's something different. You know, as we've moved away from watches, I think as you were saying in the intro, you've got a Fitbit now. A lot of people, they just check the time on their phone. And so more and more having these luxury watches is a way to set yourself apart from the crowd. Now, as that's happened, it's become less a way to set yourself apart from the crowd because they're selling like hotcakes, which means more and more people have them.
And so, and then does that lead to, or why is it that the, I'm going to say used market, previously owned market, is hotter than the new market?
Yeah, the secondhand watch. It's simply a force of supply and demand. Rolex, they're pretty happy making the number of watches they're making. A lot of these Swiss timemakers, they're making these pieces by hand. And so you're not seeing a flood of supply to match the flood of demand. And when you want to go and get that new Rolex, let's say you want a Submariner or you want the hot new Explorer 1, Explorer 2, some of these 40 kind of watches, Rolex dealers just don't have them. You can't go to the store and buy them. So people are going online and they find, oh, well, I can't get, Rolex doesn't do any sales online. I can't get it there. I can go to Amazon. I can go to Crown and Caliber. I can go to Joma Shop, one of these kind of places, and place an order for a used watch. It's in good condition. They offer a guarantee, authentication, all that. I'm going to pay an extra $1,000 more than I would at retail, but it's the only way I can get the watch.
So they've got authenticators at Amazon and Alibaba and places like that.
Yeah, exactly. They're actually really investing in this space because they're starting to sell $100,000 watches on Amazon, and people want to know, hey, can I trust Amazon? Can I trust eBay? Can I trust Alibaba? Because a lot of these retailers, like I said, Crown and Caliber, Joma Shop, that specialize in watches, they've got these people in-house. So Amazon's, your eBays, your Alibabas, they're starting to hire their own teams, people who can come in and give you a guarantee that what you order is good, so you don't end up getting the watch, taking it to a jeweler, and he tells you, nope, this thing's fake, and then you've got you just spent $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 on a fake watch.
All
no
right.
one wants that.
We got 30 seconds. Are we at the top of the market, or is it only going to get hotter?
That's a good question. You've got folks on both sides. As you've seen, there's been a lot more saturation in this market, so there's reason to believe that we're at the top. But at the same time, there's no real end in sight. People have been making watches for years and years and years, decades, centuries. So it's not like we're going to run out of watches. It's just a matter of whether demand keeps up.
Dion Robowin is a markets editor at Axios. Dion, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
And thanks so much for having me.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Remember when I mentioned that malls are slowly becoming empty because retailers just aren't seeing the same kind of business as they used to? Well, commercial businesses are saying, what the heck? And they're moving in. Two radio stations and a media company are moving into Gurnee Mills because of a number of factors. The rent is competitive to other building space, it's different, and unlike many businesses, it has the opportunity to take advantage of foot traffic. Good luck to them, and good luck to Gurney Mills. But the flower company FTD missed their good luck train because they're filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. After being in business for 100 years, a number of factors led to FTD's slide, but one of the biggest was the failed investment into a competitor, ProFlowers. Company's based in Downers Grove and will continue with business until the next move is decided, but most likely a buyout from a larger competitor. As long as they smell good and get here before my mom's birthday, I think that's all that any consumer wants, right? I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business. Steve Bryan. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. And if anything goes wrong today, we will. Steve Bryan is on a phone line now, apparently having a conversation with someone else. Your Honor.
Hello, Mr. Bertrand.
Oh, my goodness. We've had trouble today. It is so nice to hear your voice. Where?
It's because your man's in town.
What do you think of my man?
Well, we were having an interesting debate around the Conservative MP's lunch table today as to if we had lived in the States at the time, would we have voted for him or Hillary? And the opinion was mixed, but a lot of people felt that they would probably have gone for her, but now they would go for him. So I think he's come over well on the trip so far. I think some of the protest has been childish in the extreme, especially from the man who wants to be prime minister, the leader of the opposition, and Trump called him out today. We are, as a government, and I think as a country, proud to have him here. And he is welcome here because he is the leader of your great country, our greatest friends.
Okay, I'm going to ask you. I'm going to ask you to repeat yourself. So you said you were at lunch with your conservative member of parliament. You were at lunch with fellow Tories and said, would you have voted for him? And there was mixed at the time. Back then, maybe it would have been Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. But you're saying Trump has now won your group over.
I think there was that was the balance of opinion. I think one person put it very well, and they said, if I was a journalist, I'd have voted for Trump. If I was a politician, I'd have voted for Hillary, because obviously Trump's a good story.
Wow.
But hey, you know, just the fact is, you know, the visit's going well. I suspect that it's playing exceedingly well on the U.S. media with his supporters, being there in Buckingham Palace with the Queen. He's been on the throne since the 50s. And actually, you know what? I don't think he has put a foot wrong since he's been here. And the press conference with the Prime Minister today, the reporting I've seen of it, seemed to go very well. So actually, credit where it's due. Not my political cup of tea, but actually I think he has held his end up well, and I think he's done your country really proud today.
You know, he didn't do well on his way, I think, picking the fight with Sadiq Khan and more importantly with Meghan Markle. You know, and Khan certainly brought it on himself too. I thought at the news conference today with May, he was pretty restrained.
Yeah, he was very restrained. I think the thing is with the Mayor of London situation is, I mean, I doubt many Americans could tell you who the Mayor of London is. I really just do not know what. I mean, I know he was attacked by the Mayor of London in a newspaper article calling him a fascist. I don't understand why the President of America would go there, because all he is doing is raising his profile and raising him to the level of the leader of the free world. It seems like it's a curious thing to do, but I suppose that's his personality, that he can't help himself. He takes to Twitter in executive time and posts this stuff. But it was the story yesterday, you know. It was a story a lot of the day yesterday, and then obviously it was overtaken by the state dinner, which was a fantastic occasion by the looks of it. And the people I know who were there said it was, you know, fascinating, and he spoke very well and was very funny and very warm, and the Queen spoke well back and made a few interesting comments about certain multinational organizations, which Trump has been cool on, shall we say.
Put some meat on that.
UN and NATO.
Put some meat on that, right? Because, right, he's been very critical of NATO, and the Queen, who doesn't usually speak as directly as she did, talked about the value of institutions.
Yes, she talked about about the value of institutions, and that's perfectly right. She is the head of state. There's no reason why she should not do that. She didn't criticize him. She just spoke about the value of those institutions, and they are valued institutions. I think you as a country get a lot out of them. Now, obviously, his view is that you are the big contributor to NATO and others need to play their part. Actually, I think he's right about that. I think that they should. I think we are playing our part, but a lot of the other member states of NATO are not. And so, yeah, she made that point, and that has been heavily reported here overnight.
So Boris Johnson talked to the president by phone today, didn't have a meeting with him. And from some of the reporting I was reading is that it's good for Johnson to say he talked to the president, but it might have been bad for Johnson to be appearing too chummy with the president.
Well, I'm standing outside Committee Room 15 in one of the corridors of power here in the Palace of Westminster, and at 7 o'clock our time, we're about to start the first hustings, and the first person up is Mr. Boris Johnson. And so one of the reasons why he said he couldn't go and see Trump in person today was because he's got a date with us, which is very flattering. But I suspect you're probably right. But I think you're probably right, Steve. He had a 20-minute phone conversation with him today, and he also, I think he's meeting with Jeremy Hunt tomorrow, the Foreign Secretary, in Portsmouth, where he's doing D-Day commemorations, very, very important. And he's also, so reported, seeking a session with Michael Gove, who is one of former education secretary here, who is also one of the front runners. Although when I saw Michael Gove this afternoon and said, good luck with your meeting, he said, everyone seems to think this meeting is happening. The only person that hasn't been told is me. So he didn't know about it yet. Comms issues there, maybe.
The president will be gone by Friday when Theresa May also makes her departure. You're talking about the contenders to replace her. Hmm. You're one of the people who will vote to on her replacement.
Yes.
You're going to tell us who you're going to support?
Oh, yeah, I will support the Foreign Minister, Jeremy Hunt. I work very closely with him as his parliamentary private secretary and then as one of his ministers when he was a health secretary. I've seen him very close up, seen him under pressure. I'll be supporting him, and he's a very old friend, so I'll definitely be supporting him. And, yes, the Prime Minister steps down as Conservative leader on Friday, but it's important that your listeners there in Chicago understand that she will still be British Prime Minister until such time as the Queen kisses hands with another leader of the Conservative Party.
Okay, we've all seen the movies. So she resigns as the party leader, and then the party chooses her successor, right? But that could only be a matter of a day or two, right? Or how long might it take?
No, the way that it works is that we as MPs choose from the list of candidates down to a final two, and then we send that out to our party members, then get a vote, and that process does not finish, we think, until the third week of July, at which point then the Prime Minister will go to the palace and say to the Queen, I tender my resignation as your Prime Minister, and the Queen will then say to the Cabinet Secretary, do you have somebody who can command a majority in the House of Commons? Because that's how it works for a parliamentary system. And the Cabinet Secretary will say, yes, I have X. And X will then get in the car, go to the palace, and kiss the royal hand. And they then become the Prime Minister.
So I did think it was just a member of the House of Commons voting, or the members.
Used to be.
The Conservative.
Used to be, yeah. Yeah, the members are now involved.
Okay. All right. So I know that then you're supporting Hunt. Do you think he will succeed?
I hope so. I think he's got a very, very strong chance. I think we got a lot of support. He's certainly somebody who can unite the party, I think, and he's got to then unite the country, because this is like yours. This is a deeply, deeply divided country right now. Everybody starts sentences with "I think," and very few start with actually listening. We need a new leader to do that.
What will happen? Last time we talked, Brexit was facing all sorts of deadlines. It's been pushed out. Do you still think there will be a Brexit, or do you think there'll be a second referendum?
I think it's 50-50 on that, is the truth. I think that it's been pushed out to the end of October. And the EU say that they are in no mood to reopen negotiations. They've disbanded their negotiating team. So one of the questions I will be asking the candidates tonight is, what is your plan? What is your Brexit plan? And that is the key question here. And if Parliament simply cannot solve this, then it has to, you know, there's no desire for another vote publicly. But if that is the only thing left, then it's a statement of the bleeding obvious, isn't it? That is all that's left.
Steve Brine, a member of Parliament from Winchester, a Conservative member. Listen, I appreciate your patience through all the difficulties. It's great to talk to you, and I look forward to the next time we can do it.
Great. Well, we have the first candidate standing outside the room now. I am just stepping in to listen to Boris.
You've got
it live from the corridors of power.
Give Boris our best. I appreciate it, Steve.
God bless. Bye.